I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today, Tuesday, May 2nd, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
I just want to tell the listeners we were talking about the
3D printers.
3D printers, thank you. These 3D printers. There was
you get older and that happens, I know.
I was busy thinking about the program. On CNBC today, they had this gentleman on in this corporation, and they actually do the 3D printing, which it's not a new concept, but it certainly has progressed. And they actually do metal. When it first came out, it was plastics and so forth. But these are metals, and they are actually making parts for automobiles, and the container is 14 by 14 by 14, and the largest piece of equipment they were able to produce is a 12 by 12. So it's still relatively small, but it was really fascinating to see these pieces of metal, and they could do 100 pieces in an hour. And you know, when you think about jobs, and we talk about robots all the time, you know, how they're going to take over and so forth and whatnot, but now you have this 3D printer that just that creates, it's like the money that's created out of thin air. You have these little machinery pieces that's created out of thin, it's really fascinating, and it's I can only imagine if there's no nuclear war in the next 100 years, I can only imagine where technology might be. And but certainly you need a cause for population reduction, because
nothing for us to do.
Nothing for us to do.
And therefore nothing for us to create for most of us. Some will be able to create things with these 3D printers that perhaps attract the attention of others, but most of us aren't that creative. And if you're not creative, this is going to be a tough world. You don't really have anything to offer other than your creativity. If the robots are replacing manual labor, then you better be creative, inventive, insightful, something. Or there's going to be some real serious challenges coming.
Well, it's always like the Time Machine, the movie, where the guy goes into the future and all the only population you have are people, you know, in their 20s. There's no old people because you got to a certain age and
they're all funneled. Old people. They just don't look like they're old people.
And they were all funneled into underground and became became the food eventually. So, well, gold. It's struggling, folks. It's struggling, but we're still holding at 1257. 1257 today in the New York spot after market. Still trading. We have silver. 1692 down 1 cent. You have this computer. You have palladium down 4 at 930, and you have palladium up 2 at $822. You have the USDX today trading slightly lower, 0.16 at 98.98. Crude oil was down big, 1.20 at 47.64. With the dollar that low, I would expect gold to be making a spike up here fairly quickly. Paper markets still heading higher. The Dow was up 36 points at 20,949. The NASDAQ was up 3.77 at 6,095. And the S&P was up 2 at 2391. 10-year yield, 0.03 to the downside at 2.30%. The euro is up 0.20, still at 109. And the there was a couple of interesting reports today. Ford Motor Company and General Motors, they slid after April sales missed estimates. I have those numbers. Sales at all six of the biggest automakers in the U.S. dropped in April. Ford Motor and Honda posted the steepest declines, about 7%. To make matters worse, each company's figures fell short of what the analysts had estimated, sending the industry to its fourth straight down month after record sales in 2016. Ford headed for its lowest close in more than 4 years. Fiat Chrysler automobiles at one point plunged 5.7%. General Motors fell as much as 4%. The sell-off also spread to automaker parts, auto part makers, and car retailers. GM finished the month with about 100 days supply of inventory, and that's more than roughly about 70 days the company likes to carry. The largest U.S. automaker, GM, scheduled about 13 weeks of downtime at North American plants during the third quarter, while the bulk of the idle production is related to retooling factories to make new or redesigned sport utility vehicles and pickups. And you kind of wonder why people are no longer buying vehicles, because you know a lot of those vehicles were leased. So, I mean, leases only last for a certain period of time. So they're going to have to re-up on those leases. And, of course, we've seen rates rise a little bit on these auto. And I'll tell you what, if they can't afford a few little quarter points in a new automobile, they shouldn't be buying a new automobile. However, the automakers, again, it's like they're designed to fail. Who would spend $50,000 for a Chrysler minivan? $50,000 for a minivan with twin second row touch screens, reclining third row seats, a vacuum, and an automated parallel parking. The Chrysler Pacifica packs plenty of features to justify a hefty expense. But this price tag, I mean, what family can afford a $50,000 price tag on a minivan?
It's actually kind of cheap if you live in it.
Yeah.
No, if,
well,
you train, if you bought a $50,000 minivan instead of a $400,000 home, yeah, it's a little cramped, but they got those tiny house things on the market. This is a tiny house on wheels.
The average new car price in the U.S. rose about 2% over the past year. You know, that's an increase more consumers may have been able to stomach when borrowing costs were lower and loose credit made pricier trucks and sport utility vehicles more attainable. Industry-wide sales, again, have declined 1.5% this year through March, and that's according to the Auto Data Corporation. So, you know, again, it's just signs that things are just so out of whack. You know, I mean, there isn't anything that's balanced at all.
There's an article from Gaines, Paines, and Capital that touches on the auto business, and it says subprime 2.
Yeah.
Is this the needle that will burst the bubble? By now, anyone with a working brain knows that stocks are in a massive bubble. For most valuation metrics, stocks have never been more overvalued than they are today. However, up until now, the question has remained, what will be the needle that bursts the bubble? Now, we now know, once again, it's the subprime lending, but not in housing, in auto loans. Auto loan generation has gone absolutely vertical since 2009, raising an incredible 56% in 7 years. Even more incredibly, roughly one-third of this $450 billion in new loans are subprime. In simplest terms, is subprime 2.0, the tip of a what they call a $199 trillion debt iceberg, and I assume they're talking about total debt for the country, just as subprime mortgages were in the housing bubble. Auto sales have peaked, and they're now rolling over. This is a signal we've been looking for. When auto sales roll over, it shows the consumer's tapped out. This is what's happening at a time when auto lenders are making subprime loans, meaning people aren't buying even when they're practically giving new cars away. This means the industry has turned. It's now just a matter of time before the defaults start hitting. This could very well be the needle that bursts a central bank-fueled bubble created in the aftermath of the housing crash. Do you think that's credible, Melody? Do you think the subprime automobile loans are sufficient to cause a real problem in this country, or will it be just an annoyance?
Oh, no. I think it is. You know, you don't have to have something big in order to bring down the whole system. Absolutely, this is a problem. And I think I talked last week about these subprime loans, car loans, being bundled into the bond market.
Same thing they did with the housing.
Yeah.
But this time it's different, Melody.
And, you know, is it different this time?
No, that's what they say.
Okay.
Some people say there's nothing new under the sun, and other people insist, no, this time it's different. And I'm thinking, I'm more inclined to think there's really nothing new. Even get the robots and the rest of that sort of thing. It's hard to explain the robots as nothing new under the sun, but in the end, it's just another means for making money.
But a third of the risky car loans are bundled into bonds that are considered deep subprime. This is a level that has surged since 2010. And so we're beginning to see higher and higher delinquencies on these loans. Consumers are falling behind on these subprime car loans, but deep subprime borrowers have deteriorated fastest. 60-day delinquencies for bonds backed by these loans have risen 3%, 3 percentage points since 2012, compared with just 0.89 percentage points on all of the subprime auto securities. So, but hey, what the heck? It's for Wall Street. It's, you know, hey, they need to make money.
They need to make more debt.
They need to make more money. Not the traders. You know, the traders need to make more money. That's my point.
You know what the big danger is on these subprime auto loans that go into some kind of bonds is that the bonds are used as collateral, presumably in banks that believe in fractional reserve banking, which means if they buy $1 million worth of these subprime bonds, in theory, here in the States, they can lend $9 million to consumers that don't exist. This is where we get most of the currencies been spun out of thin air. It's by your local banks. When they borrow, they lend money, and they don't give you cash, they give you a check. Right? They are literally creating money out of thin air. The problem is, if under fractional reserve banking, if they can give you $9 for every $1 they have in collateral in the bank vault, if they're using these subprime loans and the bonds that are issued based on subprime loans, if they're using those for collateral and give you $9 for every dollar's worth of subprime bond that they've picked up, if those bonds go south, as near as I can understand, I think they have to pull in the $9 that they loaned based on each dollar worth of subprime bond. I think they have to call it in. And that's where this is dangerous. This is a wonderful scheme when the economy is improving. You get to multiply and multiply. It gets bigger and faster, and everything seems to be going great. But when it starts going south, that same multiplication, instead of working for you, works against you. And all of a sudden, one bond goes down for $1 million. They have to take $9 million out of the economy and call it in.
I'll
and you do
what.
That on a regular basis, next thing the economy collapses. And I think that's the real danger of this in the subprime mortgage business, the subprime auto business. Turn them into bonds, turn them into fractional reserve capital, turn them into more money that is doesn't really exist. I think that's where the danger is. And
I'll tell you what, these banks do call in loans.
Yeah, no, I think they have to. I think they have to.
And you know, you can fight them, and it'll cost you hundreds of thousands and thousands of dollars, perhaps $100,000, or you can let them win and, you know, just walk away and, you know, deal with what you have to. But I know it's, you know, I remember, you know, where I live now, there's been two people that I was made aware of where one fought it, business people.
Mm-hmm.
One fought it, was able to keep his business, and they just came to him and says, well, you know what, we don't think your business is going to be able to be sustained during this downturn, so we want our money. And he fought him, and he won, and he was able to keep his business. The other guy, it was his home, said that, well, we don't believe your business is going to be able to pay for your home, and the attorney that was against him actually won and took his house from him. So, you know, banks do They call it in.
I think they're required by law. And yeah, there is a great danger really in this fractional reserve banking.
Yeah, but you normally don't hear the stories. You hear You hear about, oh, yeah, the banks are going to, but there's never anything ever to back it up.
But so here's why.
This is true.
What happens to the banks? What happens to the banks?
They
are merged into another bank.
Yep.
The bank doesn't simply say, "Oh, gee, we're going broke. We have to call in our loans." Instead, they merge them with another bank and make the problem kind of dilute and disappear in the context of a bigger bank. And we don't have to deal with this, but we're going to deal with it sooner or later. They're going to have to call in those loans, and there may be $9 worth of loans for every dollar that they've got in bonds. And if the bond turns out to be worthless, those $9 in loans may have to be called in. And then the whole thing goes right down the tube.
And that's why we don't have banks failing, because other banks are buying them up.
Yeah.
After the crisis of 2008, I spoke to my bank, and they told me. The Fed came to them, said, "We want you to take this money." They said, "We don't want it." They said, "You have to take it." They were forced to take money. And all they had to do was
forces me to take money.
I'm
gonna hang out a sign that says Al's Bank. Come on down and force me to take some money.
Would you let me finish, please?
Yeah.
There was penalties if they didn't take the money. So they figured, well, we'll just take the money, let it, you know, whatever. So they signed one page, and I don't know. He didn't disclose the amount that they took or that they were forced to take. And he says, when we went to give it back after the period of time when we were able to give it back to them, they had to sign like 150 pages of paperwork.
Sure. Do you know why they don't want that money back?
They did not want it back.
Because I think the reason is because they needed the debt instruments. Hey, I'm going to give you $100. I'm going to create a bond for $100 then. We're going to probably use that bond one way or another, put it into the banks, and they can use it as collateral. By law, they can use the U.S. Treasury bonds as collateral, fractional reserve banking. If we can create enough of these bonds, we can actually, this is how we spend that money into the economy in theory, and the economy is boosted.
Well, I also think at that time the government was stepping in for the FDIC too. They wanted every bank.
They may have a bunch of rationalizations for what they're doing.
But it's
as nutty as it sounds. This is at least in theory consistent with the idea that we have a debt-based monetary system, which is not and cannot function identical to an asset-based monetary system. It's the opposite. It's the mirror image. I don't think it can work like the economy used to, and we're still trying to use the rules of economics that have applied for centuries on an asset-based monetary system. We're trying to use those same rules on the debt-based monetary system, and I don't think they can possibly function, and it puts us ultimately in a position where everything's going to fall down and go boom. We're going to take a break for a couple of commercials, and Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Welcome to
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Melody, you got something here that I asked if you can explain this. 24H Gold is a newsletter. They publish articles that deal with the economy and gold and whatever. And they've got a section on here on a regular basis, gold and silver coins and bullion. And it's got a list, American Eagle, 1/10 ounce, gold bar, 1 ounce, American Gold Eagle, 1 ounce, Morgan Dollar, Peace Dollar, Half Dollar, Silver Dollar, Silver Dime, Silver Maple Leaves, American Silver Eagle, Panda, 1 ounce. And they've got a list of the prices. All right, they got the metal value, one column. Next column, they have a list of eBay prices and premium. And this is, I followed this superficially, I'll bet you for a year or more. And the one thing that happens is the things vary on a daily basis, but for example, American Gold Eagle 1 ounce coins, which currently have about a $1,260 metal value. When this was written earlier this morning, it was $1,255.46. This morning, late last night, I don't know, but $1,255 metal value in a Gold Eagle 1 ounce coin. And they were nevertheless, according to this, it says under eBay prices and premium, they were apparently selling these coins on eBay, 1 ounce Gold Eagles, for $1,525 each. According to them, this is a 21.5% premium over spot value. This is incredible. This is almost $300 that they are alleged, it's $275, something like that, that they're selling the coins for on eBay more so than the spot value of the coin. So I'm asking Melody, can you explain how is this possible? Is this real? I don't doubt they're giving us real information here, Melody, but I don't understand it. Can you explain?
Well, I'm not an eBay follower. But what I would have to say is, number one, on eBay, you list the price that you want to sell it for. It doesn't mean that it's actually sold at that price. I don't think these are confirmed buys. I think these are just listed prices. I know eBay charges hefty premiums to sell the items on there along with the sellers. So, and you're looking at... it's going from spot to the price listed. Well, yep. Actually, you know, retail for a Gold Eagle would be about $1,320.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings that percentage down a little bit as far as what the real retail is versus what is shown on here at $1,525. So that might be the spread of what the eBay's premiums are. And if you have people that want to make more than, you know, a couple bucks off a coin, then they're going to mark it up higher. And, you know, maybe they'll get a sucker that comes in and pays $1,525 for it. But I don't think those are real numbers that show what the coins have been sold. I think those are just prices that have been listed, because that's the only thing that would make sense, because who in the world in their right mind would pay $1,525 for American Gold Eagle?
That you can buy for $1,325 in most for most outlets.
Yeah, so I don't believe these are real numbers, and they should have a little bit better explanation as far as how these numbers.
Offer an explanation, but this is a new thing. This has been going on for at least a year that they've been publishing these, and routinely the numbers vary on a daily basis. One day they might sell it for 14, one for 15, 25, the next day for 13.75, including the eBay prices and premiums. The numbers all over the board, but the point is they continue to publish this, and the source appears to be credible to me. They can't do it if it was fraud.
This is misleading information.
Well, it might be.
Because the whole game, the whole point of this chart or these prices listed is to show the gains. It's not about the price that's being sold for. It's not about the metal value. It's about that it can show that American Gold Eagle's, the 1/10th ounce, is up 23%. Or it shows that the American Gold Eagle, the 1 ounce, is up 21%. So it's a very misleading tool, and they really shouldn't have it shown unless they have a little bit more details. But if I looked at this, I'd have to say the reason that they mislead you is they want people to believe that these prices are real. And then somebody calls them up and says, hey, you know, hey, eBay is selling American Gold Eagles for $1,525. Well, gee, I can sell them to you for $1,425. I can save you $100 and, you know, it's still over the industry, you know, premiums. So there's a lot of various reasons, but I would call this misleading very much.
Well, it is strange, and I agree that it's probably misleading, but it's been persistent for, again, a year or more by what apparently is a credible source.
Well,
I don't understand. I'm just telling you, I don't understand.
To me, it's not credible. It's misleading. And that's why people who rely on charts, people who rely on, you can make a chart say anything that you want it to say.
And
that's why I don't, and plus when you have everything that is so rigged, you know, how can you find the truth in a chart? You can maybe see a trend to some degree over a longer period of time, but other than that, no, you may as well throw charts out the window. It's a rigged market. It's not true. So you can't chart something that's rigged. You can chart the rigging, I guess, but I view this the same way. It's very misleading. And so, and again, what their purpose is for showing it, I can only view, as I mentioned, I don't want to repeat myself, but it's to show those gains, making people think that gold is doing a whole lot better than what it really is. So,
well, it certainly is strange. You know, one of the other things that I've noted is that the Shanghai Gold Exchange they have begun to report the price on Kitco. And earlier this morning, it was up. I looked, and the price of gold in Shanghai was up about $20 an ounce higher than it was here in the States. Last time I looked, it was about $10 higher. But a week ago or thereabouts, when the first time I looked at it, I think maybe the first time they published the Shanghai Gold Exchange on Kitco, the price of gold in Shanghai was $10 higher than it is here. I'm anticipating, Shanghai is a physical market. I'm anticipating that Shanghai will eventually pay a much higher price, not just $10 or $20 an ounce higher. I'm thinking they're going to go $100 higher and maybe much more than that because they, as I understand it, they only deal in physical gold. I think they may become a barometer where the world is going to begin to recognize the difference between physical gold and paper gold. Paper gold, yeah, you can pay $12.75 for it. Physical gold, you're going to have to pay some real money. And I think that's coming, although it's not obvious, but perhaps it's beginning.
Well, I'm not going to comment on that because my views would be a little bit different. But, you know, to me, the point is, to me, what's important is what gold and silver is selling today here in the United States. You can show gold on Mars selling for $3,000, and that doesn't do me any good. Somewhere along the line, I agree, yes, there's going to be a market. Somewhere they're going to have to tag the real price somehow, some way. But I think, we got to... It's what's here in the States. Doesn't matter. To me, it doesn't matter. Just like options.
I think it's going. I don't agree. I agree that it doesn't matter right now. But I think what we're seeing, I look at it and I'm thinking, this is going to matter. It's going to be significant.
I'll tell you what, if the Shanghai is the one that's going to dictate the price of gold in the real market, we've got some major problems happening. So, again, they're not going to be taking control, and no one's going to be tagging the global gold price to the Shanghai unless our dollar has been collapsed, unless these other things that have happened and some major things are going on. It's just not going to happen, you know, on a normal daily
suggestion. What do you know about normal? What made you think there was any trace of normality coming? I mean, who is predicting normal? Oh, it's going to be...
We
don't even get a normal February. It's either too hot or too cold, Melody. I mean, normal is gone. That word is archaic.
What I'm saying is this is considered normal now. As abnormal as it is, abnormal is normal.
Here's another one for abnormal. This is from Technocracy News. The headline is AI robots will replace half of jobs in next decade. That's the headline. Robots are likely to replace 50% of the jobs in the next decade, according to Kai-Fu Lee, a founder of venture capital firm Sinovation Ventures and a top voice in tech in China. Artificial intelligence, AI, is the wave of the future. He calls it the singular thing that will be larger than all human tech revolutions added together, including electricity, the Industrial Revolution, internet, mobile internet, because artificial intelligence is pervasive. It is the decision engine that will replace people, Lee said, adding that artificial capabilities far exceed those of humanity. What he's saying, it's not just a question of robots replacing ditch diggers, all right, and people who pick up your garbage. It's not going to just replace the people who mow your lawn. It's not just the people who work physically, according to him. That's not the only problem here. It is the decision engine that will replace people. The computers will wind up doing most of our thinking for us. That is that's the implication of his statement. For example, he said companies in which the firm has invested can accomplish feats such as recognizing 3 million faces at the same time or dispensing loans in 8 seconds. He says these things that are superhuman, and we think this will be in every industry, will probably replace 50% of human jobs, create a huge amount of wealth for mankind, and wipe out poverty, but he expects it to occur in the next 10 years. I am skeptical about creating a huge amount of wealth. I am skeptical about wiping out poverty. Because the one thing you can bet is they're not going to give any money to the poor until after the poor are put, enough people are put out of work and they can't get jobs because of robots. They're going to be angry. They're going to protest. They're going to do something at the Republican convention and at the Democrat convention. But until they actually become violent, no one is going to do anything to really help them out other than give them some lip service. They're not going to get ahead of this problem. It means people are going to be certainly impoverished, and in some countries they're going to starve to death because of the Industrial Revolution, because of this robot revolution. Right, and nobody's going to do anything about it until it's too late for a lot of people. And my point is, if it can replace 50% of human jobs, and this guy's talking from China. This isn't somebody from Houston or Dallas or Los Angeles. He's talking from China. They expect to replace 50% of human jobs. They're anticipating that on a worldwide basis. They have to be anticipating something like that in China itself, and they're anticipating it within the next 10 years. This is not something off into the next century. This is not Buck Rogers. This is in your neighborhood right now. So, I don't know. It's going to cause for extraordinary changes in society and how we value ourselves, how we value our work, how do we pay people. You know, part of the reason we have a free market, or at least we were supposed to have a free market, is that depending on how well you do your job, you can make more money or you make less money, right? And it's part of the difference between a man who makes $100,000 a year and a man who makes $250,000 a year is not simply the work they do. It's how that work is valued by others. And it allows us to distinguish among ourselves. Where I said, well, ha, 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 I'm making $100,000 a year. And somebody else comes and says, well, that's nothing. I'm making $250,000 a year. You're nobody. And somebody else comes and says, well, I'm a billionaire, and the two of you are a bunch of punks. It is something we need in the way we relate to other people. what happens to us? How do we distinguish my value from Melody's value from your value if we all get paid the same amount of money because the robots are doing virtually all of the work? Once we go out on welfare and we're all paid the same, how do we distinguish between ourselves? And I think the answer is violence. I think it's part of the reason why you see a lot of violence in the welfare community. It's not simply a place where you can kick back and life is good because it's all free. It may not be plush, but on the other hand, you don't have to work for it. You'd think it'd be all right. But the equality of income interferes with a basic need to compete to show people that I mean, it's like two deer locking horns in order and the one, it's not because they've got nothing better to do. It's whoever wins gets the females. There has to be a means of competition. And if the robots are going to do the work, it will no longer be work. We will not compete on that basis. How are we going to compete? Because I think it's inherent in us to compete. What are we going to do? Fight? Play basketball? Weave baskets? What are we going to do? And it's going to require an extraordinary change in our society to deal with what appears to be a robot revolution coming at us like a freight train, maybe even an express train. This is not going to dabble. This is going to be half the world is going to be unemployed a decade within the next decade.
And you know what? So many people don't understand because they say, well, you know, you just don't like technology. What's wrong with robots doing these jobs? And, you know, you just explained it. You know, it's not going to work. Either people are eliminated.
Yeah.
Or there's going to be problems. Yeah. Because it's part of being, it's that human being, you know, it's what humans do.
It's what creatures do. Globally, I mean, we compete. The males compete. They compete with bigger horns. Peacocks have bigger plumage. They compete to get to the female. If we're all going to be equal, we have the same plumage, the same horns, we win the same number of battles, all of a sudden, how do we distinguish who is the alpha male, who's the beta male, who's the gamma male, and so on? And can we give that up? Can we give that up and say, oh, let's sing Kumbaya. We don't need to compete anymore. I think that competition is built in. I don't think it can be removed except with drugs, perhaps, or maybe some kind of brain surgery or something like that. But it's part of our nature. It's what we are. And we won't be able to do it on the basis of work. That's going to be, how's the world going to adjust? Interesting times, terrible times. Fascinating times, maybe end times. You know, it is certainly, we are living in what is probably the most exciting period in the history of the world. As confusing as it is, as potentially risky and dangerous and exciting and sort of thing, some people are going to be billionaires, some people are going to be wiped out. This is an extraordinary time. It's no time to be weak, cowardly. You've got to be smart, you've got to be educated, you've got to have some courage, you've got to be able to step up, take advantage, defend yourself. You know, all of this is easily said, but it's hard to do, and we'll watch and see how it unfolds. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold. gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey water filtration systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, I wanted to remind the listeners, if you want to give us a call today, our phone number is 844-769-2944. Is that correct, Al? Yes. 844-769-2944. If you got a question for us, give us a call. The Justice Department today has expanded its two-year-old probe. It's amazing how long it takes for them to probe something into Wall Street's rigging of the U.S. Treasury markets. And they sent three subpoenas to three European banks. The Department of Justice is seeking documents and communications from BNP Paribas, the Royal Bank of Scotland, and UBS. The subpoenas, which were sent out in the last few weeks, signal that the investigation has expanded beyond the scope of Goldman Sachs and Deutsche Bank, the two companies that have so far been at the center of the DOJ's probe. The investigation into rigging the Treasury has been one of the most secretive probes in Washington. Sometimes to the frustration of other agencies who are seeking similar information, the SEC, the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, the New York Department of Financial Services, and the European Commission are all looking into the collusion to rig the $14 trillion market. And of course, spokespeople for these three banks, the BNP Paribas, RBS, and UBS, they all declined to comment. So, 2 years of probing finally got three more subpoenas out to see. So, I wonder
how many
more years.
Think of all the bribes that came in, Melody.
Yeah.
We only generated three subpoenas, but we got lots of bribes, Melody. Lots of deals have been cut.
Yeah. Well, the Treasury now is run by, I believe, a Goldman Sachs guy, so it kind of makes you wonder.
It gives you,
you
certain
know, at least maybe 8 years. Maybe they'll have another 8 years for it to...
I'm thinking we should get that guy El Chapo, the Mexican drug dealer that they've imprisoned, captured, imprisoned.
Yeah.
Maybe you could appoint him head of the DEA. All right, he knows the business. He knows the racket. Why don't we bring him in? It's what we need is a good drug dealer to run the drug enforcement agency of the country.
What's that got to do with the Treasury?
Well, they put Goldman Sachs up there. He's taking care of the bankers. He knows how the banking runs. He has a natural sympathy for the bankers. I'm thinking maybe El Chapo has a natural sympathy for other drug dealers. You think that's
true?
You
know what was interesting? I didn't know, because Ted Cruz came out and said that, since you brought up El Chapo, that they could use the money from his drug deals that I guess that the government has to help pay to build the wall. What I didn't know, what I found interesting, was the government is already using money from his cartel, for lack of a better, drug cartel, for various things. And I'm thinking,
so he grew up to be, thought he was a drug dealer, and turns out he's a bureaucrat.
Yeah. just like, really? Are you kidding me? I don't know if I see anything wrong with it. But I just thought it was interesting that,
And
then if they're using his money, the drug money, for various things, you wonder how much of that drug money is also going into various pockets of business and so forth and government. So I'm sure quite a bit.
Well, when you think of the great sacrifice the American government workers make for the benefit of the American people, it's only right that they get to skim a little off the top.
Good grief. Things just get more crazy, and it's just the little stories like that that really don't mean a lot. They're interesting, and it kind of connects the dots a little bit, and it's just like, are you kidding me?
No,
country is just so corrupt, just as bad as every other country. The world is just corrupt.
I don't know if we've always been this corrupt, or if this is relatively new levels of corruption at an increased level that we hadn't seen in the past. But the one thing about it is, regardless of whether the corruption is the same as it always been or it's new, it's being exposed on the internet. And the problem government has is there's no secrecy in the internet age. We have secret after secret after secret that's being whistleblowers are making available. Julian Assange, WikiLeaks, the rest of these outfits, they are making
the problem, Al. No one cares.
Well,
that's
they do the for problem. Some. They do to some extent.
Really?
It overwhelms people. Are indifferent to it.
Show
in a lot of
where
regards.
Somebody gets
but
thrown
it's still
into jail.
There.
Because of something that they've done. You've had the LIBOR rate scandal. Now you have the Treasury scandal that is so secretive, you don't want to tell anybody about it. Well, it's the same thing. Those bonds, if those were all rigged, come on. All of those bonds should be null and void, just like all those LIBOR rate deals.
Oh, I understand.
It's just global.
The whole system is going to potentially blow up.
So no one cares.
Up until now.
No,
up until now, that's significantly true. But you don't know. That's true. Everybody's going to care a lot if all of a sudden they don't have anything to eat. All right? They will care about the information because they're going to be looking for someone to blame, and the government is not going to have any trees or brush or rocks that they can hide behind. They're going to all be exposed, and they're going to say, wait a second. Didn't Julian Assange say you're a bunch of crooks? Didn't he give us evidence? You guys are a bunch of crooks. That's when the government's in deep trouble. If the stuff hits the fan in the first place, then people are going to be looking for who are they going to blame for it, and when they do, it'll be the government, and they're not going to have much cover. So that information is out there. It might not be useful at the moment, but it's there. And my point is, in the internet age, it's really at engaging in criminal activity is an improv. There's a low probability of success. Some people will succeed brilliantly, massively, might make billions of dollars. But for the rank and file crooks, and any crook really, I doubt that you can guarantee that you won't be exposed. And so, what does that tell us? Does it tell us you just that everybody's going to be indifferent to criminal acts forever, and we might as well all join in? Or does it tell us that sooner or later the stuff's going to hit the fan, and you better have your nose clean when it does? So, another one of these signs of the, interesting times. What do you do, Melody?
Buy gold and lots of it.
Yeah.
And you sit back, because that's going to be your only protection against the devastation that comes financially and in other ways, just as we talked about all the social unrest and so forth. But and you know what? You listen, you read. I read both sides. So, you have to know what your enemy's doing, all this kind of stuff, what they're saying. And I just can't remember a time, recent time, where there's so much bickering and fighting and name-calling and backstabbing, and it goes along with the same how everything is so corrupt. It's like they're all scrambling to just find the... It's people don't care what they say about anyone. I read what Colbert said about Trump on his opening dialogue. I guess it was last night. I can't believe that this person who I don't like to watch him anyway, you know, he's disgusting in my view. And I have my issues with Trump. But you don't. The things that he said about Donald Trump, he should be thrown off the air. He was lewd. He was unbelievable what he said. And it's just, but who cares? Who's going to
Yeah, but you know, if you're a public figure, the way the law on defamation works,
this was crude and lewd. I mean,
it may be that he's straining the envelope and maybe there'll be a consequence and maybe they won't, but everything happens. I mean, this is shock radio. Right, this is people been doing this for a long time. Let's do shock radio. Let's do reality TV. Let's show them what life is really like. Well, they're showing us what life is really like, and some
really,
of us
this is the president
are responding
of the United
in the same
States.
Coin.
This
I
is
get
still
that.
The president. I mean, you can make jokes. You can, you know, you can have fun at something. You can make jokes. You can, you know, tease about it. You know, whatever. But you don't. I mean, it was just very. It was shocking, and you'll have to go read that. And I'm not going to say what he said on the air, but it's just.
Did he use any bad words?
Oh, it was nasty. It was really nasty.
You know, I think it's one of those things. We all get shocked by it. We all get I don't know if we all get amused by it, but some of us are amused by it. But sooner or later, that's going to blow up in everybody's face. There's going to be a counter reaction. The pendulum swings one way for a while, and then it swings back the other way. Before it's done, we're going to have a restoration of not just moral restrictions on what you have to say, but we're going to have political correctness to an extreme where people like yourself, Melody, in the beginning of the program, you were having a little trouble with your computer, and I could hear you saying, oh, these damn computers. You won't be able to say that when the robots take over, Melody. You're
going
to have to love your computer. You must love your computer, Melody. And you will not be allowed to make any negative comments about the beloved. You can do it about the president, the Congress, the senators, but not the computers, not the artificial intelligence. We will love the artificial intelligence. I got an article here from Zero Hedge on David Stockman, who is the former head of the budget under the Ronald Reagan administration. And the headline is Stockman slams Trump's dead on arrival tax plan, warns Wall Street's delusional for believing it. David Stockman has a stern message for investors. They're investing in a fantasy land about Trump. He says, I don't know what the stock market is thinking, but if they have faith in a giant fiscal stimulus and tax cut, then it's delusional faith that's going to be badly disappointed, and I think fairly soon. Yeah, he goes on, he says that Wall Street is totally misreading Washington, and President Trump's promise of tax reform will be dead before arrival. The president is essentially, according to Stockman, the president is essentially a 70-year-old kid in a candy store who wants one of everything, more for defense, more for veterans, more for border walls, more for law enforcement infrastructure, and he wants phenomenal tax cuts, too, without the inconvenience of paying for any of it, said Stockman. Well, as I've been saying here in the last week or two, I think Trump must increase the debt. If I'm right in the way I understand that the debt-based monetary system mandates that the debt must constantly increase, then Trump must increase the debt. And when Stockman says you can't do it if you don't pay for it, that's not true. You can do it if you can get more people to borrow money for it. If you can increase the debt, you can have everything in the candy store if you can increase the debt. Of the proposed tax bill announced this week, Stockman said, it's a wonderful fantasy, but there's no way to pay for the $7.5 trillion cost of its main features. I like the tax plan, but you have to pay for it, either with a new tax, like the border adjustment tax, which is dead, or spending cuts, which Trump has ruled off the table. What you have here is a total fiscal calamity that's going to basically dominate Washington. Eventually, however, Stockman expects the drama in D.C. to trickle into equities, sparking a significant pullback in the price of stocks. What Stockman's telling us here is a persistent theme that we see on the internet. Pundit after pundit is making the point, okay, we got all excited about Donald Trump coming in, and we got optimistic and hopeful and the rest of it. But can Trump deliver on the tax cuts and the infrastructure spending? All right, can he spend more money at the same time he's reducing taxes? And the answer is almost certainly he cannot. He can pull some stunts like trying to bring capital in from overseas, from corporations that are swirling it overseas. Probably not, but he can try it. It might work a little bit. Mm. All right, he may have some other angles, but to do what he wants to do, he has to raise taxes or he has to dramatically increase borrowing, probably dramatically increase inflation so he doesn't have to pay off the existing debt. Everybody, all of us, are caught between the rock and the hard place. And the only other, and those of us who are there, and that includes virtually everyone in this country, including Donald Trump, we are all caught between the rock and the hard place, and it's only a question of time before the squeeze really puts all of us under an enormous amount of pressure. I think the only way out of that dilemma, I won't say the only way, but one of the ways is you have to have savings, you have to have assets, not debt instruments, assets, assets, assets. And among those assets are gold and silver. Again, you buy it for an investment now? Probably not. Buy it for an insurance policy? Yeah, probably necessary. It's like health insurance for people that are 80 years old. Not a bad idea. All right, might be necessary. Got to get some gold and silver coin, Melody.
We got a lot of 90% coming in. We have some dimes, nice dimes coming in, 90%, and we still have some quarters left. They can give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. You can buy it. I like selling the $50 face value little bags. So you can get a mixture, or you can get one of the dimes or one of the quarters. 800-375-4188.
Okay, folks, we're out of time. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.